Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing a recent study looking at lower urgency care in the emergency department and the suitability of general practice care as an alternative. My special guest is Associate Professor James Mallows, who is Director of Emergency Medicine Research at Nepean Hospital in Sydney and is also a senior emergency physician there. He has recently conducted a study into this topic, which is published in the Medical Journal of Australia. You can find a link to that study in this podcast description. Associate Professor James Mallows, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Associate Professor Mallows, let me firstly ask you about perceptions of emergency department overcrowding. Is there a general lack of understanding about overcrowding and access block from your perspective?
Realistically, the short answer is yes. Access block, overcrowding, it's all related to inpatient beds. People stay in the ED too long because there's a lack of inpatient ward beds. So they stay in the ED admitted, and then that then lends to inefficiency of emergency care, even for discharge patients. The trouble is all of the emergency medicine literature really backs that up. But again, people just aren't aware of it. And so you get a lot of media reports about, how GP patients are clogging up EDs. You got a lot of administrators thinking that the ED is inefficient and they just need to do things better. But generally, the whole cause of access block is, the lack of inpatient beds in the hospitals for admitted patients.
And you set out to explore some of these perceptions in your recent research published in the Medical Journal of Australia. What prompted this research?
Well, really, the research was driven by the AIHW report itself. Even back in sort of 2010, 2011, they were actually referring to GP-type patients clotting up the EDs. Now, they have softened their language a little bit, but that sort of language is more implied than innately, stated. But from my experience, these patients aren't really presenting. They're saying a third of patients are, low acuity GP type patients, but I see patients, in the ED, and they take a lot of work and a lot of sorting out to sort of assess and manage. All of the emergency medicine literature states that the truly sort of GP type patient is around about 5 to 10%, and then when you look at costs, they contribute maybe 2 to 3% of the running costs to the ED because they're very low acuity. They never occupy a bed. They don't get a lot of inpatient, investigations and management. And they spend, certainly in the Nepean Hospital, they spend most of their time, in a waiting room in a chair. So they're not clogging up ED, bed spaces. So it's just not really a related, cause of overcrowding, and all of the emergency medicine literature really, really supports that.
And let's talk about the complexity of the patients that you are seeing. They're not, quote, GP type patients. Patients may be presenting with multiple comorbidities. Can you talk to me about the reality of what you're seeing in the ED?
Well, I mean, just going through the actual analysis of the patients, based on the AIHW criteria, yes, there were about just under a third, so about 2,000 patients for the month of June. But going through all of those patients, first of all, some of them were admitted, but they were discharged from the ED because of access block. They never got to a ward bed in the first place, and those patients are actually counted as discharges. And second of all, a significant percentage were actually sent in by GPs to start with. But yes, when you look at the patients in that sort of Category 4, Category 5 cohort, a lot of them are elderly. They've got multiple comorbidities. They spend hours in the department. Just looking at the results, 500 of them got x-rays, 100 of them got CTs, so they are getting quite complex investigation and management in terms of what's happening in the ED, even though at the end of a 4, 6, 8 hour stay in the ED, they might actually end up going home and end up as a GP type patient on the AIHW report.
So the fact that you are seeing these kind of patients, what does that show to you about where the gaps may be in the health system?
So I want to take a step back and say, look, good GPs keep people out of hospital. This is not a criticism of what GPs are able to offer and what they can offer. Based on their on what I see, you know, they've got a very short time frame with the patient, and a lot of it is primary prevention and management of risk factors and managing chronic health. What the ED sees is patients that then, you know, the GPs have done their best with, but they've reached a point where they need more intricate care as well. You know, locally in Penrith, you know, there is a shortage of GPs, and GPs are starting to, you know, not to bulk bill and charge upfront fees. And so people are seeing their GPs less, and then their chronic health conditions are starting to sort of to deteriorate. And that's all of the talk about the whole COVID, you know, complex over the last 2 or 3 years, where, you know, patients were avoiding seeing their GP and the chronic health conditions were starting to be a real problem. And that's what's starting to really generate a lot of load in the ED, patients who could have been managed better, who maybe need to see their GP every couple of weeks but don't, and they fall through the cracks and end up in the ED with an exacerbation of their illness.
So what you're saying is you're seeing the end of the line effects of people not being able to see a GP, not being able to engage in primary care, perhaps as much as they would have, due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
That is certainly part of what's happening, because we have a lot of chronic health in the community. The population is aging, and aging population need more health resources. They need them in the community and they need them in the hospitals. And so there will be an increase of health needs all over, you know, community, inpatient, in hospitals. But what I'd also like to say is, because of that workload, the GPs just aren't able to see the acute injuries, the acute illnesses, certainly locally. A lot of people say, look, I tried to get into see my GP and they were too busy and I didn't have any other options. And regardless of that, they probably need to be in the ED, but at least they're trying to see the GP, or they're actually thinking about it. And maybe more GP resources may help. Certainly there's research out there that suggests in some cases it does, and then in some cases it doesn't. But certainly, you know, the patient who's truly GP-type patient, they've got a runny nose and they just need a script, those patients don't exist in the ED. Patients generally know that it's a very long wait in the ED, and it's for very sick patients, and they will come if they think they're sick enough to need an ED and they're too sick to see a GP.
And let's look at this AIHW criteria you talk about in the research. Can you tell me a bit more about what you found?
Looking specifically at the findings, really I just wanted to unpack what the patients defined by the AIHW criteria actually had in the ED, and what investigations were performed, what management they actually received. It wasn't necessarily about these patients are not GP-type patients, and it was not about how many GP-type patients are there. It was more the sort of other side of the coin is, well, how much of these patients might not have been able to be seen by a GP? And sure enough, you know, out of 6,500 patients for the month, just under 2,000 were defined as low acuity patients by the AIHW criteria, but only about 450 of those were actually deemed to be potentially suitable for general practice care. As I said, some of those patients were actually admitted patients and should have gone to the ward, but because of access blocks, spent 24, 48 hours in the ED and were discharged and counted as discharged patients. So the AIHW criteria are actually including admitted patients in their cohort. And then a significant proportion were actually referred to ED by a general practitioner in the first place. So again, they're counting patients as potentially GP-type patients, but then they're actually sent in by a GP to start with. You know, in terms of specifics, you know, a significant portion had an investigation for high-risk chest pain, such as a troponin or a D-dimer. You know, a significant proportion of patients were having CT or ultrasounds. You know, these patients that we deemed the CT necessary at the time of presentation and not something that could be performed as an outpatient, as you would imagine in a GP. You know, because we certainly in the ED try and send patients home for semi-urgent or non-urgent investigations for the GP to follow up, but, you know, a significant patient required them as an inpatient ED, and these are going to include head injuries. You know, when you look at a patient with a head injury, they come into ED, they go home, they might be a category four, but they might have some minor concussion symptoms that prompt you to do a CT scan. But again, the AIHW count them as a low acuity patient, GP type patient. And then you've got another group of patients who are actually receiving stuff like intravenous fluids, intravenous analgesia. You know, these were patients who had significant amount of pain, you know, that we weren't just giving tablets to. And certainly there's a paper that I'm certainly aware of in the literature, which, you know, the title is I've Got Hospital Type Pain, Not GP Type Pain. You know, the impressions of patients that are coming to the ED because they think they've got pain that's too severe for a GP. And this research is saying that they do. You know, we are giving these patients, you know, intravenous, intramuscular morphine, fentanyl, because they're presenting in severe pain, even though they might get a triage category 4 or 5.
And let's discuss the solutions. What needs to change with the AIHW criteria from your perspective?
It needs significant change. There are a couple of validated tools in the emergency medicine literature that basically, when you use, give a rate around that 5 to 10% mark. Certainly the data that I used, what part of my analysis, which wasn't published, was looking at the Australian College of Emergency Medicine criterion. And basically that showed that 5.6% of these patients were probably GP type patients as per the ACEM method. So there are validated methods out there. The problem with the AIHW report is the fact that they're using very, very superficial database type data. So when you look at the ACEM method, it's actually looking at lengths of stay. They define a GP type patient as having the total treatment time, so from the time they initially see a doctor to discharge, is less than 1 hour, which makes perfect sense. But the AIHW doesn't actually have that data. They don't have the lengths of stay for individual patients. So the AIHW is actually constrained by the data they possess. It may be better to not publish that data at all, except as, well, you know, how many patients, you know, of category fours and fives presented, but acknowledge that it's a very rough list and it really only deals with acuity. But there are certainly other validated methods out there, but that analysis is not able to be undertaken with the data that the AIHW actually has. And that was the aim of doing my study, you know, having the AIHW patients, but then really going through patient by patient exactly what they had. And that's probably why this research is so novel, because no one's actually done that before.
I'd like to ask you now to cast your mind ahead. If you look at the different issues that every ED has with access block and with people presenting with multiple comorbidities, how can the system be fixed from your perspective?
Look, it has to be a federal state combined initiative. There's certainly talk in the medicine community about the split between state and federal funding. And I don't want to misquote any numbers, but I feel as if a little bit more contribution from federal to state would allow hospitals to become better resourced. But then on the other side of the coin, we need increased GP resources, just as we need an increase to all health resources. But this has to be a whole of health solution, not just a whole of hospital solution. We need more of everything. Even, you know, specialists in the Penrith district where Nepean Hospital is, patients struggle to see specialists. They might see their GP, they might have heart failure, they need to see a cardiologist to really tighten up their management. But that's not available either. So again, without cardiology input, they end up coming to the ED because the GP is doing a great job, but the patient deteriorates anyway. So it's really a whole of health solution. There needs to be more GPs, more outpatient clinics, more consultants, especially consultants in the community, and more hospital resources.
And let's take a broader view now. Having been an emergency physician throughout your career, what are the changes you've seen in the type of patients coming through and the general trends in emergency?
I'd hate to say it, but I'm going to draw it back to this kind of study and this kind of patient. 20 years ago, there was a culture that a patient would turn up to the ED and they would own a bed for the entirety of their stay. So if you presented with, symptoms or signs of a DVT, for example, you would sit in a bed, you would have the appropriate investigations management, you may even get admitted, and that's the other thing I'll talk about in terms of changes, but you would spend the entire ED in a bed. And we realized in about 2010 at Nepean that just wasn't going to cut it, because we just didn't have the bed capacity. And that's where we started to introduce ambulatory care zones, ambulatory models of care. The biggest change was generating an internal waiting room for patients that had already been seen. And we incorporate that in our subacute model. And again, we published this in the emergency medicine literature, that this was at the forefront of changes of models of care. So that's the biggest thing. Now, barely 20% of patients presenting to the ED may actually occupy a bed. A lot of our care is around ambulatory models of care, and even complex patients, we've got a special zone where they are mobile, but we can see them in a small acute care type facility, but they spend most of their time in comfy chairs, sometimes not that comfortable, and a lot of their medical assessment and management is done in examination couches. And out in subacute and in fast track, yes, they almost never occupy a bed. They spend 20 minutes of assessment and management in a consultation couch and spend most of their time in a chair. So that's the first thing. Second thing compared to 20 years ago is how few patients we actually admit. And this is going, again, 20 years when I started my emergency physician career. We used to admit patients for things that wouldn't even get through the door now. I mentioned DVT, heparin drips, initiation warfarin, they would be in hospital for a week and they go home now in, hours. Same with cellulitis. We've got a fantastic hospital in the home set up at Nepean Hospital, and cellulitis, they just don't get through the door. We may admit them overnight to our emergency medicine short stay and then call hospital in the home the next morning and they will take over care. So instead of cellulitis spending 3, 4, 5 days, sometimes a week in hospital, they go home and they have intravenous antibiotics given at home. So that's a massive, massive change in what we do. So those two things. And the last thing is an emergency medicine short stay where we can just admit patients, even for the day, send them home in the evening, is a big change in practice in terms of what we're doing in the emergency department.
Associate Professor James Mellows, thank you so much for joining me today.
No, thank you. I really appreciate the chance to have this kind of discussion, and it's good that that these discussions are out in the web sphere.
My special guest has been Associate Professor James Mellows, who is Director of Emergency Medicine Research at Nepean Hospital, and is also a senior emergency physician there. You can read his research by clicking the link in the podcast description. You can find more podcasts on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me.